Morning. I wish to split the 30 minutes into two main features of this week's Sedre. The first is on the tragedy of Nudav Avihu, and the second on the Behemoth's Kesheres and the Timaeus. The Torah describes the tragedy which befell Klal Yisrael at the climax of their joy, which took place during the inauguration of the Mishkan. Let's quote the Psikim briefly. What happened subsequently was accolades follow. The Rashbam describes a fire that went forth from above, descending like a pillar, entering the Kodesh HaKadushim and out towards the Mizbeach HaZur, continuing on to the Mizbeach HaNechoshes and causing both the Ketores and the Chaluvim to rise up in smoke. The people saw this, and the Pusik goes on to describe it, Vayoroinu. They gave praise to the Reboinu Shalolam. And then they fell upon their faces. It was at this point that Nadav and Avihu both independently brought Keteres. The Torah describes it as Eish Zuru Asher Loi Sivu Oison. Loosely translated, an alien fire which was not commanded. The reasons for their death are manifold. Rashi cites the first two of them, one here, one in Parshas Mishpatim. Number one, they were Moira Halucha b'fnei Rabbi. Number two, they were Shtuye Yayin, in a state of inebriation. That's the Medrash. Number three, they gazed at the Kav Yuchel inappropriately during the time of Matan Torah. Vayechsu es Elokim, vayoichlu vayishlu. Number four, they entered without mandatory prior washing of hands, of Kiddush, Yudayim, Raglayim. Number five, they were Mechusa Begudim, without wearing the appropriate garb, specifically the Me'il. Number six, they were as yet unmarried. Number seven, listed separately, they had as yet not had any children. Number eight, at one point they were following Moshe and Aharon and were punished for saying, Musai Yomusu Shnei Zekeinim Halolu Vani Va'atu Nanik Esador. When will these two elders pass on and I and you will lead the generation? It's remarkable that we need eight additional reasons where the Torah categorically stipulates the reason for their death was Asher Loi Tzivu, performing a service without divine instruction. When we were kids, we thought, when we grow up, we'll do things differently. In the eyes of the child, then I'll be a daddy. I'll give my children unlimited nash. However, some of us grow up and perceive things differently, and perhaps less judgmentally. There's a Veltel that describes this phenomenon. Your children, when they will have their own children, suddenly view you differently as parents. Whereas beforehand they judged you severely, once they have their own progeny, they are more understanding and forgiving. Once your children have their own children, this contributes to Shulam al-Yisur. But this has a twofold reference to our Pasha. Number one, Nudav and Avihu's harsh judgment of Moshe and Aharon as inadequate leaders. And number two, our pitiful and petty judgment of Nadav and Avihu, who were essentially Kedoshei Elyon, Bikroivai Ekudesh, I will be sanctified by my close ones. Rashi quotes and cites that they were greater than Moshe and Aharon. I wish to convey two independent mahalchim of Usfasems, both novel, and introduce them by asking several questions. One, how indeed could Nodav and Avihu have uttered, how could Nodav had uttered to an Avihu an unfathomable comment? Musa, Yomusi, Shnei, Zgeinim, Alolu, Vani, Va'atu, Nani, Ges, Hador. At first glance, it appears inconceivable. Two, why in fact did they altogether transgress something which was Asher, Lo, Yitzivu? And three, the end of the saga concludes with V'chol Bais Yisrael Ifki Yis Asrei For Asher Suraf Hashem, implying some sort of communal responsibility for what had tragically occurred. The Kiddush HaSlevi on Purim cites an Alshech, which asks a question pertinent to the week following Pesach. In the Agud it's written, sing it, Ilu kevuna lifnei ha-sinai, v'lo inosan lono es ha-toiro, dayenu. Obvious question is, of what use and purpose would it have been to sit at the base of a mountain with an unfulfilled expectation? Answers the Alshech, that upon reaching Har Sinai, posku zohamoson, literally, the poison infused by the Nuchash HaKadmoini had dissipated. They were pure, they were unsullied, they were at an exceptionally lofty level. Let's develop this further. Tzaddikim enjoy a sensitive spiritual antenna, which is tuned into a frequency that is eager, ready, and desirous of fulfilling the will of the Eibishter. Every fiber in their body gravitates towards that goal. For example, Avraham Avinu runs to the Maluchim, Parshas Vayayro. His limbs literally gravitate towards the mitzvah of Achnusus Ochem, the Oskarbet. It's like a magnet. Vayishlach Avraham es Yudoy, Vayikach es Amacheles. Famous vote that he had to force, going to overdrive, to push his limbs to go because he thought that the Sultan was stopping him from doing the Akaida and to actually do the Maaseh Shechita. What actually was really the truth was the Rebbein Shloim didn't want him to do the Maaseh Shechita, he only wanted him to be Maalehu. But Vayishlach Avraham es Yudoy, because the Tzaddik's Avraham desirous, they gravitate, they want to actually perform the Rebbein Shloim's will. Maluchim too have this sensitive antenna. Therefore the Torah describes Maluchim as Sadu Libchem Achataboiru, one single heart, collectively, with one objective, one goal. They describe Maluchim as Giboire Koyach Uisu Devure. This is where the Yidden were prior to the Chetu Eger. And they were therefore able to proclaim Nase before Nishma. As they were attuned to fulfill the Eibishter's Rutzen. This is where Nodov and Avihu continued to be, even after the Chetu Eger. More so, it was their intention to raise the level of the Jewish nation, returning it to its former spiritual glory. Hence the comment, Musa yemisi shnei zkeinim alubi v'ani v'atu, nani gesado. We will take over and we will bring them to where they might be. However, the nation was deficient. I'll elucidate with my own example. A king ventured out of the palace, accompanied by his royal entourage and soldiers, in a display of majesty, pageantry. A commoner burst forth from amongst the crowd with a cloth and began shining the king's shoes. he was instantly shot and removed from the crowd. The scene changes to the palace. The king walks through the corridor, about to exit and meet the crowd. At this point, a close and loyal servant bends down to polish off some dust he noticed on the royal boots. And he's rewarded with a smile of acknowledgement. Now we can appreciate why Nudav and Avihu were taken. Their acute spiritual antenna gravitated towards bringing the Keteres, which they felt would bring the Eibishter Nachas Ruach. This would have worked if this was the status quo of the entire nation. But it belonged only to them. And on their own, they could not carry the day. Ani umalti elokim atem. But rather it was uchein ku'udom temusum. They were no longer poskuzo hamoson. The protocol had changed, shifted. No more were they the loyal servants inside the palace, but judged as trespassers. Asher loy tzivo. The consequence? Immediate death. Furthermore, v'chol beis Yisrael yifku es asreifu ashesuraf Hashem now takes on a more meaningful dimension. It was the beis Yisrael, the Jewish nation, which was implicated with the demise of Nadav and Avihu, as they did not share the same spiritual plane. Their exalted ones suffered. An entirely different angle is brought to view in this parsha by the Sfasemes in Tuf Reish Lamed Vov. The word mitzvah, we know, means command, but also means to connect, as the word tzafso. Connecting a human being, a bus of dom, to an esh oicheles, is unachievable. The closer the performer of the mitzvah is to the Ribbono Shel Olam, makes it even more remarkable. His intimacy with the creator of the world would be in an entirely spiritual realm, without space for physicality or gashmias. So what indeed prevents the tzaddik, who is closest to the Eibishter, from expiring at the point of Kiyam HaMitzvah? The answer is, Asheyase hu oisom hu udom, vuchai buhem. Each mitzvah carries a skula and protective merit that sustains the yid despite its performance. And the tzaddik is not perturbed, and he would be prepared to be moiser nefesh, literally, to gain this tzavsa, this connection and closeness. The protection works only when instructed. However, in this case, it was Asher Loi Sivu. The consequence, therefore, was death. When it is written, Vayakrivu b'nei Aharon, they were literally makrev themselves. The Chedisherim had a nephew. He was called Rapinche of Pilz. He was considerably older than the next Rebbe, the Sfasemes, and therefore hesitant to become a chuset. When the other chassidim returned from Ger with the Torah I just repeated to you, Reb Pinsche was dumbstruck. He said, "Wie groß er ist, weiß ich nicht. How great a man he is, I don't know. Aber kein Bluffer ist er nicht. He's not a cheat. He's not a bluffer. Er wollte nicht gesucht kann sag, wo sie halt nicht bei der Bar." He wouldn't say something that he's not up to himself spiritually. Now, I'm eager to travel to him. Now to zoological issues. The Klei Yuka makes a remarkable observation on the following psukim. The pusik starts, Vaydab Hashem al Moshe ve'el aharo en leimor, dabru wa b'nei su al leimor, zoi sachai wa asher toichelu. Mikol ha-bahaymo asher l'uretz, kol mafres es parso shes es shasa, and then he goes on. Achaze lo yisoichlu, the list starts with those which you're not allowed to eat. Imale geiru mafres es parso, and then he goes on. The Torah delineates the following shall not be consumed. The gumel, the shofon, the arneves, the camel, the hyrax, and the hare. And in each of these which possess one siman tahara, the Torah starts with the kosher siman. For example, es ha-gumol, ki ma le-geiru hu, ufaso inenu mafris. Then he goes on to es ha-shufo, ki ma le-geiru hu. He chooses the cut. Es ho-aneves, ki ma las-geiru hi, uparso lo-ifriso. Again. And then ultimately our friend, the Chazer, Kimafris Parso, who? Telling you that he's got split hooves. Asks the Klei Yuka, wouldn't you stress the negative property first, which deems it impure, rather than its positive property? It's amazing. Even more so, why not give an example of animals which have neither Siman Tahara? So we say the Gumol, because it has a particularly positive attribute that it is Malas Geiro. Explains the Klei Yuka that one kosher sign is evidently worse and compounds the problem. Using the pig who has the legendary Chazer Fisel outstretched, displaying his kasher symbol, he stresses that this deceit is indicative of intrinsic hypocrisy. So the Pusik stresses those which outwardly display Ehrlichkeit, Feinkeit, Simone Kashrus, are intrinsically worse than those which are what you see is what you get. Consequently, the Esachazir. Do you want to know what his worst flaw is? Ki mafris parso hu. He displays the Chazer Fisel. That's his problem. Deceiving you, seducing you to believe in his purity. This is the Esav of Haich ma'asrin es ha-teven ve'es ha-melach. Talking to his father Yitzchok. Machen briske chelukim. This is the Esau who gets married at 40. You know why? Weil der Tata sich so gefiert. We believe in Masada. My father got married at 40. He took married women from any way he could get his hands on them, but trust the God, but felt secure. Consuming these internalizes these base and two-faced characteristics. This brings us to the next point. The analogy of the Medrash of these four animals to the four nations. The Gumal to Bovel. The Shofon to Modai. The Arneves to Yovon. And the Chazir to Edoim. Time restricts me in elaborating, but please check the Klei Yuka who quotes this Medrash. No, I'll just very briefly go through just this little piece over here, and I'll read you the words of the Klei Yuka. B'zeim Yushev Mashadoshu Es Hagum Ol Zubovel Shenema, and he brings the pusik to back him up. Bas Bovel Ashedudo Ashrei Shishalem Loch Es Gemulech Shegumal Tolono. The word camel appears. Ves Hashufan Zumodai Ki Malas Geiruhu. What's the Malas Geiru? Shemegadel Es Tzadikim, because Mordechai came from there. Mordechai Yoshev Shamelech. Aneves is Yovon, because it says Alexandres kat Chazer l'Shimon HaTzadik, the famous thing where he met him and he came with his horse and he bowed down to him. Kuim al raglayim roche, and finally the Chazir is Edoim, Mare atzmei kushe v'geiru lo yigo. I pondered over this kliyuka and its veracity, relevant to the pig, symbolizing Edom. Yechasemenu chazir miyua. The beer guzzlers and blutwurst gluttons of Bavaria. Over the centuries have internalized these debased characteristics. Overwhelmingly, this is the two-faced, double-standard, hypocritical and deceptive psyche that depicts Germany. As the Gemara Megillah, Tavuv describes Germamio shel Edoim. In case you have any doubts, Rabbi Yankov Emden, the Yavetz, spells it out very clearly. It means Germany, a civilization which produced Bach, Brahms, Beethoven, Mozart, Mahler, giants as Goethe and Schiller, that this was all superficial. The Chazafisl extended for all to view them as exemplary citizens of Western Europe. Yet only 70 years ago, the world witnessed horrors committed by these cultured people that had no precedence. The hypocrisy was epitomized by euphemisms. They didn't deport people to their death on cattle trains. They resettled them. They didn't practice unparalleled genocide against innocents. They solved the Jewish problem. Sonderbehandlung, special treatment, really meant execution. And everyone knows what the Entlösung, the final solution, meant. They were the masters of euphemism, not really saying what they meant. Isn't that the ultimate Chazafisl? If Germany really believed that they were doing the world a legendary favor by making Europe Judenrein, why did they expend so much effort to destroy the evidence of the death camps? With the analogy of the impure animals to nations, I felt these thoughts resonate within the lines of the Kliyuka, who preceded the Holocaust by over 320 years. In a lighter conclusion, Rabbi Tugendhat on Monday Nariyot alluded to our aquatic friends, fish. With an interpretation from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Reb Shol Alter, however, the Rosh Yeshivas Vasemes, had a marginally different take. The Mishnah says, whichever fish has scales, has fins, but not the reverse. You can't count on a fish that's got fins that it's got scales. Asked the Gemara, if so, why mention fins at all? Just mention the scales. Once it's got scales, it certainly has got fins. So the Gemara answers, Omer Rabavu, chein tun de bei Rabbi Shmuel, Yagdil, Teuro, v'yadil. What sort of an answer is that? Answers the Rosh Hashiva. Scales protect the fish from predators. Fins propel the fish forward from A to B. We might feel comfortable going to Daf HaYomi, davening Tefillah B'Tzibur, having matzahs which are tanerishen, being makbid on chodosh in Chutz Loretz. I'm speaking to myself. But what about knowing a single mesechta thoroughly from cover to cover? What about a single Shmoyne Esra where every word is expressed with kavuna? We rest on our laurels. Scales. And our scales are protecting our egos by rationalizing that we are voili yidden. But what about the fins? Don't we need to propel ourselves forward from a stagnant and stationary position? And that's what the Gemara is alluding to. Lo mukos v'atoyros napir. Why did the Torah mention fins? And the answer is, Yagdil Toiro v'yadir. Become mighty through Yagdil. Constant increase, constant growth, propelling us forward spiritually through the torrential waters of Olam Hazeh. Thank you.